Well, so Peter Ashley is here. Thank you for spending the morning with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've had a lot of guests actually come through. You had like a real office hours.
Yeah, it's rad. Fun. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how with Instagram now you're so connected.
Yeah, did people see the announcement you made this morning and come by?
I think that's what it is, yeah. I just posted that I'll be here. And
that's awesome.
People stop by, yeah.
Are you sticking around after this? Can people still come by? Or you have to take off after this?
I'm going to take off because I have to finish up some work.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. I'm off to Cleveland, Ohio tomorrow morning.
And you just got back another trip from yesterday there last night, right?
Yeah, I was in Malta for a day.
That's nuts.
For a shoot, but yeah.
Are most of your shoots out of the city or even out of the country?
I wouldn't say most, but there's a fair amount of travel involved, which is nice, but sometimes
tiring.
Yeah. I feel like the older I get, planes are getting
less exciting.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you get any time when you're traveling to look around the area or the cities at all?
Sometimes. I think when it's, but most of the time it's just you're there. You do the shoot and then you leave. But, yeah.
Get back to your bed.
I mean, I can't complain. It's like, you know.
And so let me check one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, should be all right. So just for people that aren't familiar with your work, you're primarily a fashion photographer?
Yeah, I think I guess so.
I don't want to like pigeonhole you or anything.
No. I think that'd be fairly accurate description.
Your job
of the work
is,
I'm doing these days. Yeah.
Cool.
I started off in portraiture, but
okay.
A couple years ago, I've now transitioned fully into fashion, I'd say.
And most of the shoots, like the Malta one and the one in, you said Ohio next?
Yeah. Tomorrow I'll be in Ohio for a fashion shoot.
Those are like shooting campaigns, basically?
Yeah. Like for brands or magazines and yeah.
Majority. That's cool.
Yeah.
How long have you been working in the fashion side of the photography side?
So I've been in New York 12 or 13 years now, and the first 4 years I went to SVA for photo.
Okay.
So as far as like working or trying to work as a photographer, I've been at it for at least 9 years.
Okay. Because I'm not that familiar with the photography industry.
Yeah.
Like, are you represented by someone? Are you really independent? How does that usually get set up?
Actually, fairly recently, I've been working with like a manager of sorts.
Okay.
So she's been essentially like an acting agent of sorts.
Cool.
Yeah. But it's been good. But, you know, there are photographers who work in-house for brands or companies.
Right.
And so they'll be there shooting everything for a specific brand, or if you're in-house at certain magazines, maybe you're there shooting constantly for them.
Did you ever go through a stint like that?
I didn't, no. I've always been freelance.
Nice.
And yeah, I enjoy it because you have a lot of freedom and you could pick and choose. And, you know, obviously, like, when you're starting, you don't get to pick and choose.
Yeah,
you just say
sure.
yes to everything.
Are there certain campaigns or kinds of brands or kinds of... Well, I guess I was kind of curious, when you're, let's say that Ohio trip or any of the trips that you can talk about, I guess. Is there a aesthetic or a look or a type of shot that the brand is already expecting? Or do you have a lot of freedom to bring that to the table?
Yeah, I think it depends on the shoot. But generally, I think when they're booking me, they want to book me to take the type of photos that I make.
Okay.
So they're booking me for my aesthetic. But obviously, it has to kind of fit their brand, so that kind of varies here and there. And they'll usually send me a mood board and say, like, this is the vibe we're going for, this is the story. Huh. And that mood board will include a couple of my images as well and say, like, you know, we really like what you did with this, and
Got this
is kind of the feeling we want. Or so that's kind of the variation that you find from job to job, is maybe one will be a lot happier than others, or some of them are a little bit moody or whatnot. Or
is that aesthetic that I guess you're getting known for, that you're known for, is that something that you consciously curated as a certain aesthetic, or is just really much more intuitive?
I think it happened pretty organically. Like I said, when I started off in portraiture, I had like a, I don't know, for a while, like I felt like I was the guy that you book if you wanted like really soft, quiet, like natural images.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because I shoot with daylight mostly. So that was like a vibe. And for some reason, I was getting booked a lot to shoot older actors.
Oh, interesting. That's
like a thing. So, yeah, I don't know. Like there was a moment where I was just getting booked to shoot a lot of older artists or musicians.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you notice that at some point? And you're like, huh, this is a weird pattern that.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, but I enjoyed it. I mean, there were amazing people I got to work with. You know, I got to go to like Joan Didion's home.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So that was pretty rad.
What I've been typically doing is kind of moving backwards from literally what you do now and stuff. But so I'd actually, even just in terms of what you do now, I'd love to just hear about, like, how do you, because I'm very unfamiliar with it, how do you prepare for any particular shoot? Like, do you just kind of go and, well, I'd love to just kind of hear, like, any sort of background research you do, or do you just sort of show up and, like, feel it out?
Often some brands give you more briefs than others or more details of what they're looking for. And when there are briefs, I'll prepare in the sense that I just get an idea of what type of images they want. And then I walk into it and try to be aware of that. But for example, the brand I just came back from Malta with, Brown's Fashion, they give me complete freedom. So they'll just go, okay, here's the model we're shooting. We're going to be on a yacht in Malta.
Okay. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, do whatever you want. And then I just bring my cameras film, and then we just take pictures and hope that they like what I do.
Do you know the model that you're going to work with ahead of time?
Usually a couple days before or so. And fortunately, in Malta, it was a model that I'd worked with a couple times before. So It makes it a lot more comfortable. And yeah, it's just nice to... Yeah, it's just more fun when you know people, and yeah, and even the team there, the Browns team. Now I've traveled with them a few times around the world, so it's we're all. It feels like you're just hanging out with friends.
Yeah, that's nice. Chilling, yeah. I feel like that's the ideal when you feel like, all right, this is the job that I work towards to get to. Is when it feels like you're just getting paid to hang out and actually hang out with friends and people you like. And
it's funny because I often say, you know, when people get stressed out or whatnot, you know, and myself included, sometimes I get, you get nervous or you're stressed out about something coming up and you're just like, man, we're not saving lives here. Yeah. Like we're selling clothes. Like, and you know, there's no reason for egos. You just want to be around nice people and just have a nice time. And we're so privileged to be working in the creative world that I just think, I just don't understand when there's people that, I don't know, like have to, there's like a power struggle or there's egos involved, because that has nothing to do with photography or creativity. So I just find it so unnecessary. I don't know. It's always just nice when you're with nice people.
Yeah, for sure. That was actually one of the guests yesterday, and you know, she was a person who is part of like five companies, like is a sort of multi-entrepreneur. And basically it came down to, it wasn't ever an intent to start these companies, but just like she had people she liked working with and they were like, oh, let's do something. And then you end up with a fifth company and a sixth company.
It's a lot of companies.
It's a lot of companies. Yeah. That's why I was like, that is incredible. It was kind of intense.
Yeah.
But that same thing, I think, where it was just sort of like, it didn't sound like it was like more jobs.
Right.
It was just like, I want to hang out with these people anyway. And
yeah,
we have an idea anyway. So it actually works out really well. But, so when did you make was it a discrete transition from portrait photography to fashion photography? And how different is that in terms of like a method? Process?
I think it happened pretty organically. To be fair, like maybe two or three years ago, I think I made a conscious decision and I deleted my whole website.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I took it all down. I think I really love portraiture, and I think that's what initially drew me to photography. And a lot of the artists whose work I was looking at were doing portraiture. So I thought that's what I wanted to do. But it's interesting because all those artists that I admired were working in the fine art world. So I think it's a different thing when you're making just personal work for the sake of art. Mm-hmm. And it's in a different context of galleries and creating books and such. But in the commercial world where I'm working and in fashion, doing portraiture, I kind of felt like I got a little stuck where I was kind of pigeonholed as the portrait guy. So
okay.
You're kind of getting booked doing the same things over and over again. And for some reason, I was getting booked to do a lot of celebrity stuff, and that comes with its own sometimes, you know, like I said, like not fun situations. Sure. Yeah, you know, you have egos, you have everyone has their own agenda. You have publicists who come on set, right. and they're suddenly like, you know, stepping in to be like, well, I don't like this shirt, or can we try this? Or suddenly they've gone from publicist to art director, right. and stylist. And, you know, so I think, not to say like they're all like that, but because I met a share of like really lovely publicists and really lovely actors. And, but, you know, there were enough couple times where an actor would be so disrespectful or huh. really rude to, or condescending to myself or my assistant. And I was just like, I don't, why am I doing this? Huh. Like, I don't, why am I here? Like really giving you everything to help you sell your movie.
Right.
But you're not respectful of my craft or the people that are with me. So I kind of got sick of it. And I was just like, I don't want to do this. And it stopped feeling creative, too, because suddenly we didn't have as much creative freedom that I had hoped. Like I said, everyone has. And I understand, because if you're a celebrity or an actor, you obviously have your image that you want to... nurture as well, and maybe that doesn't fit in with my personal aesthetic. And
you felt there's much more of a kind of two-way respect in when you went commercial and started doing the fashion
I think on the fashion side you have a lot more creative freedom. So mm-hmm. when you're shooting a magazine, you know, they have it, you work with the fashion editor or the stylist that you're working with, and you come up with a concept together. Mm-hmm. I don't know, and you don't have, and it's very collaborative. And you know, you don't have like models being like, well, I don't really wear that color, or you know, or like, you know,
which is surprising. Somehow I totally, well, I'd never really thought about that, but I guess even though obviously there's incredibly famous models and they're yeah. celebrities in their own right, I guess when you're still working with them on these campaigns, it's sort of in the service of something else, like the brand basically, or you're supposed to highlight the clothes. You're not there to necessarily celebrate the person
right.
as much.
Yeah, and everyone, I mean, for the most part, is a professional. And yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to create pictures that I was excited about, and it stopped feeling that way.
Was it hard to make that switch from, like you said, you took down the website?
Yeah.
Did you have stuff to put back up? Or were you like, oh?
Yeah, so I shot a couple fashion stories for some magazines, and then I took everything down and posted that stuff up. Yeah. And then it's, you know, my regular clients would call up and be like, hey, we have this like portrait with this.
You're like, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, that's actually what I had to do. And it was quite scary at first, because yeah. you're like, oh no, what if this doesn't work and I'm like out of work and I can't pay my rent suddenly. But fortunately, you know, it was just like, oh, you know, like I'm actually trying to focus more on my fashion work. Mm. Can I send you the new stuff I've been making? And you know, if you have anything that kind of fits more of this aesthetic and this new work I'm doing, then I'd love to work with you. And I think in a way, I'm sure like Instagram was really helpful also to relaunch that new work. Because once I started putting out there, then that same network of photo editors or mm-hmm. art directors started seeing that work and being like, oh, wow, you do this now. Like, and we have a project for you. And it kind of grew from that organically. Mm-hmm. But I would say that was probably one of the best decisions I made.
To make that switch?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're going to be a commercial portrait or celebrity photographer, I think you're better off going to LA or something. That's because most of the work is out there, I feel like, for that type of work. And also...
She might get a little closer.
Yeah, and I think you also have to just kind of love that world. And I'm just not... I don't know. It's a lot of like stroking people's egos mm-hmm. and like trying to be friends with famous people. And that's just not a that's not part of, I don't know. It's just not something I'm good at or nor that interested in.
Do you think that, I mean, it sounds like that transition from, I mean, I guess there's certainly those like scary moments when you took down the site and were like, oh shit, I hope this works.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
It seems like it was obviously a success and relatively seamless. Like, was it, were there points where you're like, fuck, I need to pick up portraiture again just to pay rent or?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, if there were jobs that came up that paid well, I would say yes. Mm. But, yeah, and I don't mean to sound super negative about portraiture or celebrity, because, like, there were parts of it that were amazing, and you meet some incredible people and people that are super talented, and, you know, I got to photograph a lot of amazing designers and architects and artists and musicians, and you know, most of it I enjoyed, but I don't know. I think it's funny that you could have like 10 amazing shoots and then like one mean just person who shows up, and yeah, then you're just like so deflated and you feel so beat down, and you start questioning like, why am I doing this? Like, why I'm not happy, you know? It's weird that you kind of remember only the negative times as opposed to the positive. Whereas like, yeah, I guess since in the past 2.5 years, I haven't had those moments where I come home and I'm like literally like miserable and like in tears, because I'm like, oh, I hate what I do, or I can't believe that person was so rude to me or condescending, or I don't know. Maybe I'm just sensitive.
No, what I think is impressive is, I mean, not only obviously feeling that, but then doing something about it.
Yeah.
Seemingly quite, like bluntly. It's like, switch is happening, sights down.
Yeah.
New thing. Yeah. But I was going to ask, I guess, and because you mentioned the Instagram thing, if obviously it was very important, I think, to that transition and I guess your sort of professional side of the moment, but could you imagine that switch happening as smoothly or as quickly as it did without the social media, like if it was 10 years ago,
right,
you wanted to do that, was that a thing that you saw photographers, you think photographers were able to make that switch?
I don't know. I think 10 years ago, there were probably less photographers
out
there. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, it was, I think the landscape's definitely been changing for better or for worse, you know, a lot recently. And yeah, I mean, social media and Instagram is now your portfolio. People DM me for, I just did like this Chinese shoe campaign, and some random, like some guy
that came through Instagram.
Yeah, he like slid into the DM and be like, hey, you want to shoot our next campaign? Yeah, and I thought he was like, I was like, I don't know if this is real. And I was just like, yeah, can you like send the details to my manager via email with like the and then it actually happened.
That's so amazing.
Like, you know, more and more, I think it's this almost like direct to, yeah, people feel like there's this direct line that they can reach out to you. So brands will message me directly, or often like I'll work with certain brands and afterwards I'll be like, how'd you guys find me? They're like, I don't know, we saw this picture on Instagram and we liked it.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so it's definitely
Are you conscious of when you're taking the photos, are you conscious of how it might appear on Instagram? Like, is that always in the back of your mind? Or less so?
How that picture will appear on Instagram when I'm shooting? Yeah, if I shoot a bad picture, I'll be like, well, I hope they don't post this one because I don't like this one. No, I don't know. I mean, I just think if you think too much about it, then you can't, it could be paralyzing and you can't do anything. And
well, it's funny because I guess, when I was asking, I was like, oh, well, photography is literally like what Instagram is based, like imagery.
Yeah.
So I guess like there's that disconnect between the product of a photograph, which is literally an image, and the Instagram is not that far away.
Right.
I was just thinking, because it's funny, I've noticed in the last few years, so many clients are like, make sure we get that Instagrammable moment in the architecture, which isn't necessarily designed to be photographed, but now it's much more on people's minds, and it's not usually the primary thing, but it's very important. And so I've been trying to oftentimes, like, is that a good or bad thing? And actually what's nice is, even though it's meant as a two-dimensional image, I think there's always a point in the bright where it lines up and something actually like hits really well and it's framed in a particular way. So it's actually a nice way to even like to affect the spatial design of it. But it was funny. I was like, what? I don't know if I've ever designed anything specifically for Instagram, let's say. But
right.
I'm sure it's affecting how people are looking at their designs.
And it's just marketing, right? It's a marketing tool out there. And I don't know. I mean, it's funny, like, even with brands, when they reach out, you know, before it used to be like, okay, we need 6 main photos for the campaign or whatnot. And now it's like, okay, we need 6 main photos. We need an Insta video, 15 seconds. We need an Insta, you know, we need these 5 images for Instagram. But it makes sense because if these brands post that photo to their, whatever, 6 million followers, that's getting that much more exposure and opportunity to sell clothes, because at the end of the day, that's what they're doing, right? So
can you talk about when you finished SVA,
yeah,
did you go straight into being a freelance photographer?
I tried.
yeah.
yeah. When I was in, backing up, when I was in my first year at SVA, there was this teacher I really liked named Sid Kaplan, and he was our black and white printing teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think he's like, he must be at least in his like 70s or something. And he was this funny, cranky dude. And yeah, I remember our first day of class, he goes, "Oh," and it's all freshmen, so it's our first year of, and it's one of our first classes in the week. And he goes, "Ah, you all want to be photographers? Wow, let me tell you, if you're going to make it, you better be rich or crazy." And for some reason, that stuck with me, and I was like, "Oh shit, I'm neither. What am I going to do?"
Switch majors, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I know we were talking earlier, but just at the beginning, there aren't outlets that will give you an opportunity when you're starting out. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of stuck because you need images and experience for your portfolio, so other people book you. But then, how do you get that first start? And someone's take that first chance. And a friend of mine who I went to high school with, she was like, "Oh, my older brother is going to Columbia for journalism school. You guys should meet up." And the two of us got together, and we realized quickly, he's a writer, but we quickly realized we had this shared love of print and matter and magazines. So I think our friendship developed over like once a month meeting at Barnes and Noble and like flipping through magazines.
Which Barnes and Noble?
The one at Union Square. Yeah. So we'd like grab all these magazines and sit on the floor and just like flip through them and not buy anything.
You were still at SVA this way?
Yeah. This is like first year. I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was the first year, because when I first arrived to New York, I got hit by a taxi.
Oh, shit.
And so I missed the first semester, I think.
Like right away.
Or second semester. Yeah. Anyway. And during that time, that's where we met. And
were you out for a whole semester?
Yeah. I had to take a semester off because I had like fractured a bunch of stuff, like my knee, my wrist and ankle, and I don't know, tore some ligaments.
Jesus Christ.
And I thought I was going to get rich from that lawsuit, but I didn't win anything.
Really?
Yeah. The New York, the taxi legal, whatever,
I'm sure they're gnarly,
department are like so,
oh, fuck,
so strong that we couldn't win.
Were your parents like, "Please move back home"?
I don't remember, to be honest. Yeah. So no, I think they were worried, but I had to stay to go through all these like medical examinations and get stuff treated. But anyway, so coming back, so Tim, we became friends over magazines, and then he, you know, he was hustling, trying to like write for stuff. And I was running around trying to figure out how to shoot for anything or anyone. And I was, you know, getting myself into free like newspapers and free, magazines that would let me shoot. I think it was like one of those like local New York.
Like AM New York or something like that?
Yeah, like stuff like that. I'd shoot like little portraits when it's like...
How would you approach them offer your services for free?
I think I just emailed like photo editors, and I'd just be really honest and be like, "Hey, like, I'm new here and I'm in school, but I really love what I do, and I'd love for like anything you need." And I remember shooting like a new candy store that opened in New York or something. And it was, that was for some, like on flight magazine. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and they paid me like $100 to go do it. And yet I was like so stoked.
You're getting paid for this.
Yes. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's in print.
That's
like,
amazing.
This is amazing.
Like I'm making it.
Yeah. And like I didn't really have money at the time. So I even like once we learned like studio lighting in our first year, I had taken pictures of like friends and stuff and put that all together and even made those like headshots for $99,
yeah, really?
With like the, you know, the phone numbers at the bottom you could rip off. And I put them all over the city.
That's amazing.
And I ended up getting asked to do like, I think that led, so those posters all over the city.
So this was like for your services?
To do like a headshot or whatever. And I remember it was $99 and I made photocopies through like the school photocopier, put them around the city and I booked one job, I think, from it. And it was this woman who wanted to send sexy lingerie photos to her boyfriend in prison. I kid you not. So she came.
Did you know what you were like walking into when you got to the apartment or whatever?
No, like obviously, like we had talked before. She's like, this is what I'm looking for. And no, I was like, all right, cool. I think I could do that. And she showed up to the SVA like studio.
No, she
the
came
photo
to you.
Studio. Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't know where else to shoot it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, yeah, come to the photo studio. Cause then I could use the school lighting and whatnot. So I remember doing that photo and like, yeah, she paid me in cash, and I was like, "Oh, I think she even gave me a tip because she was happy with the photos." And she's like, "Here's $120." I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing!"
You're like, "I'm so good at this."
And it's funny now that I think back on this; it's so wild. Just like
that's kind of fashion photography.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and
did she end up sending him any
follow
up?
I assume so. No, I don't know.
Like that my boyfriend's super happy with these as well. Like, no.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like 12 years ago, so I have no idea. Yeah. Maybe that could have been a niche. Like.
So you were already doing, like, jobs here and there.
I was trying to.
Like, during school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, sorry. So coming back to Tim, so the two of us were like, we're not getting the opportunities that we want. And he was like, he was writing for like finance magazines. Like those are the only things he could find for some reason. Mm. But yet his greatest passion is Britney Spears. So it's like there's a disconnect there. And so at one point we're just like, hey, why don't we just start our own magazine? Huh. So we could like shoot and write stuff we want to. And that's what we did. We figured it out. Like we started like once again going to the magazines and seeing like where are these printed? Who's distributing it? And we're just like ask, you know, and we winged it, and we just figured it out.
And that was Corduroy?
And that was Corduroy, yeah. And we managed to do 11 issues over, like, the span of, like, 6 years. And that ended up being, yeah, like, kind of almost like my foot in the door in the industry. Yeah. Because, and we were so clueless. I mean, we were, like...
Was it just the two of you guys?
Just two of us at the beginning, and we had a couple friends who were graphic designers who were also at SVA who helped us do the layout and design. You know, we took out a small loan at the beginning. We were just putting our own money into it and kind of wearing all hats and figuring it out, you know. And it was so like when we first started getting actors and such, it would be like, oh, we really want the actor to be comfortable, so we'd love to come to their house to shoot it. But it was just because we had no money. Like, we couldn't afford a studio.
But you got some pretty, you were just mentioning before, like some pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
People on there,
I remember I mean, it took time to kind of get to that point, but people, you know, the first issue, I was like messaging people on MySpace, like musicians being like, hey, can I shoot you for my new magazine that I can't show you, but it's going to be awesome. But over time, the publicists, I think, really appreciated the aesthetic of the magazine and the print quality, and it was different from kind of the glossies that were out there. And we were focusing on, you know, creatives who maybe are a little bit more classic and timeless and underappreciated of sorts. So yeah, we had Isabella Rossellini on a cover.
That's amazing.
We had Angelica Houston on a cover. We worked with Ethan Hawke, Ben Kingsley. Huh. So yeah, it was kind of an amazing experience.
Were you limited? I mean, besides, I think the trickiness of getting in touch with these people, were you limited with people that were like in the New York City area because you could get to them easier? Or did you fly out? Did you have yourself like a travel budget?
Sometimes we'd have to, we'd go to LA and stay at the cheapest hotel in the LA airport. Like, I know LAX airport hotels because that's the one we always stayed at. And then we'd like, it's funny. Like, we'd go to their homes and shoot them and such.
It was amazing.
And even in New York, we'd make the, because we didn't have studios often, it was like contacting hotels and being like, hey, can we give you an ad in our magazine? And then you let us shoot in one of the hotel rooms.
That's cool.
Or especially in LA, they're stoked when you're like, oh, I'm going to shoot whoever this actor in your hotel room. So, it was kind of an amazing experience. So I really enjoyed it.
And that ran for about 5 years, you were saying?
5 or 6 years, I'd say, yeah.
Did you ever think at some point that you were going to be a magazine person as opposed to a photographer during that period?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of enjoyed kind of having different roles in the magazine because when you're running it, you have to produce it. You have to produce the shoots. Mm-hmm. You have to organize everything, and you're wrangling actors.
Right.
I remember, like, in New York, I saw, what's his name? Who's that guy from Lord of the Rings?
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood, yes. He was sitting on a stoop, and I just, like, walked up to him, and I was like, hey, man, you want to be in our magazine? And, like, Tim and I always carried a copy in our magazine in case we saw people we wanted. And I, like, went up to him and handed it to me, like, flipping through. He's like, oh, yeah, I know so-and-so. They're a friend. And he's like, yeah,
that's
let's
amazing.
Do it.
And you got him.
And we got him, yeah. So a lot of it was super organic. And
do you remember with Cordway the very first, whether it was a actor, band, whatever, that agreed to be shot?
Yes. The first cover was, her name escapes me right now. Oh, the one from,
we can look it up.
Donnie Darko.
Oh,
Jenna Malone. Jenna Malone.
Who's Jenna Malone? Sorry, Jenna, if you're listening. Who's Jenna Malone?
When you
totally.
Yeah. She was our first cover. And
that's pretty good. How'd that happen?
So there was this band at the time. It was like siblings, a brother and a sister who are like 10 and 12 year olds, and they had a rock band. And like there's a bit of buzz about them, and I emailed I messaged them through MySpace, and I was like, hey, like, you know, really cool what you guys are doing. Can we do, like, a shoot an interview with you?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah. So then we shot them at, like, this apartment I was living at the time. And then their dad, who was kind of managing them, was like, oh, you should come to their concert. And we were like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. And we went to their concert somewhere, and at the concert I saw, like, Jenna Malone in front, like, just rocking out. And I was like, and then after the show they're like, oh, how'd you enjoy it? I was like, yeah, it was awesome. And did you know Jenna Malone was at your concert? And they're like, oh yeah, she's our friend. I was like, you are 10 years old. How is Jenna Malone your friend? Like, this is so funny. And the dad was like, yeah, I'd be happy to, like, put you in touch with her if you'd like.
And that's
and so she was like, they put us in touch. And she just said, like, and she was doing a lot of music at the time. I was like, oh, come to my concert or something. And so I went to her concert.
Was this in New York?
This is in New York. So now I'm at her concert. And
had you told her at this point that you wanted to, like, include in the magazine? Or just, like,
I up? Like mentioned something about it.
She's like, yeah.
Like, the dad put us in touch and was like, hey, these guys just shot my kids. And, you know, just wanted you to introduce them. He's starting a magazine. And went to the concert, and at some point, somehow I snuck in backstage because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm from Corduroy Magazine, as if it's something that exists. I'm from Corduroy Magazine. Like, here's an email. Like, I was supposed to meet Jenna, and I got to talk to her. So they let me back, and I went up to her, and I was like, hey, you know, like, just telling her about, I was like, oh, you know, like I met you through the Tiny Masters of today. Like we were emailing. She's like, okay, walk with me. So I think this was after the concert. She's like, walk with me. So then we walked outside.
Were you like, where are we going?
Yeah. And we're like literally walking down the street in New York. And she's just like, she's like, so what's it about? And I kind of gave her the whole pitch and we're like, oh, you know, it's going to be an arts and culture magazine and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I love your work. And I think, you know, we'd love to have you on the cover for the first issue. And then, like, she's just listening. And then she goes, give me your hand. I was like, okay. I pulled out my hand. And then I think she pulled out, like, a Sharpie out of her pocket and wrote her phone number on my hand and then took off dancing down the street.
like by herself?
Yeah. Like, back to probably, like, the concert hall or something. She literally was like, give me your hand, wrote her number, and then ran down the street dancing. And it's one of those things, you know, when like you have a memory and you're like, did that actually happen or did I dream it or am I like, you know, embellishing it? But I really think that's what happened. That's like, I tried to think back and I think that's really what happened. And then
it totally sounds like a teen sort of rom-com.
Yeah.
Like moment, like middle of summer. Like.
Yeah. And then, and then she came out to my studio in Bushwick or like not studio. Like I was living with like five people in a shared like loft space in Bushwick. And she came out there and like we did the shoot in that space.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, we like next right after the shoot, we walked down the street to a bodega that had like, you know, random tacos, and we sat there and ate together.
That's insane.
Yeah, like I mean, she was super cool and really just funny. Like really, really generous and amazing. and that was our first cover, and you know, and that was enough for us to kind of show it to other people and be like, "Hey, look, we got someone famous.
We got
on
Jenna.
The
not a big deal. It's cool. Yeah, we know her." Exactly. Good friend of ours.
Yeah.
Now you're about to start. You're in the midst of starting another magazine or another kind of like media project.
Yes. It's called Burdock Magazine, and I'm starting it with my sister.
Oh, cool. I know.
Yeah, and who's 9 years younger and lives in New York, and I don't really know where to start.
I was gonna ask, is the impetus to start, because for example, like Corduroy is rad because you started it, like you, I think you were saying before, that you need to almost create your own platform to show for someone to listen, to give you an opportunity. You're like, fuck it, we're going to make our own opportunity that way.
Yeah.
Is there a similar drive for Burdock in terms of you needing to showcase something that nobody is paying attention to or whatever?
Yeah.
kind of leading you on, I guess. But
yeah. As you know.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. I think for us, the mission was to start something that increases Asian American representation in legacy media, which I think is really important in the way it shapes the way people see people of color or people of other cultures. And you know, I think when you guys first called me about being on this, it was also, oh, Dong has felt that. But there's a lack of representation and role models. And I very much had that similar feeling where I remember moving to New York and wanting to go into photography, but I didn't know any other. I mean, I'm technically Asian Canadian. But I didn't know any other like Asian American photographers who were doing what I wanted to do. I didn't know anyone who was shooting for magazines or brands or things that I dreamed of one day working for. So how do you know your possibilities and how do you know that you can make it if no one's done it before you? And obviously there were Asian American photographers working, but not you know, it wasn't visible to me.
Right.
I mean, you'd almost have to go looking and I just thought it was really important. And I think the story my sister Hannah and I talk about is early this year, Allure magazine reached out to me and they said, oh, we're doing this whole issue on eyes and we'd love for you to shoot a beauty story about Asian eyes, like monolids without, you know, like without the crease. And they were like, and for this, we thought it'd be important to have an all Asian crew, which, you know, you have creative freedom. We're going to book an Asian model, hair, makeup stylist. Would you be interested? And I said, oh, yeah, that sounds really good. So we did that. And I thought it was just going to be like a beauty story or whatnot. And when it was published, it came along with kind of interviews with different Asian women kind of writing it. It accompanied the photos of Asian women writing in about their experience of not maybe feeling beautiful because they're not knowing how to do their makeup. And I remember when the issue came out, my sister called me and said, hey, you know, I just saw your Allure story. And I hadn't seen it yet. And she was like, oh, I just saw your Allure story. And I started crying. And she's like, I didn't realize I felt this way or that I felt similarly to all these other women that have written in. And that was really powerful. And she was like, you know, I'm so proud that this was something you worked on and that you were a part of this. And I don't know. I think I felt very touched. Then I kind of just reflected on my life moving forward as a photographer, whatever. And I just went, where do I want to be in 10 years? Like, what do I want to be doing? And on the current path I'm on, if I'm just focusing on becoming, you know, the best fashion photographer that I can be, like, what's the best case scenario? Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, so maybe one day I'm shooting for X, Y, and Z big fashion brands and shooting these campaigns or whatever. But that didn't seem as fulfilling, or I wouldn't be contributing in any way. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like, I think that's, I feel very lucky to be in this industry, but I do think there's a part of me that sometimes feels like, am I doing more harm kind of taking photos and being in fashion photography, where perhaps you make people feel insecure about the way they look, or, you know, if I'm being completely honest, sometimes I do feel like maybe I'm doing harm somehow, or there's a bit of guilt there. But then at the same time, I kind of think about, like, how can I make things better or contribute or give back? And I don't know. And then it's got me thinking a lot about representation. And
just put it in it for, I guess, listeners, in the context of even just your specific field of fashion photography.
Yeah.
you had brought up earlier the Beyonce cover and how she hired the first African-American photographer to shoot for Vogue.
Yeah.
Shoot a Vogue cover, is that right?
I think that was for the September issue, and Beyonce was on the cover. And I think, from what I understand, she was asked to, she wanted like full creative control and wanted to be able to curate. And she had said, you know, if you want to shoot me, I want an African-American photographer. And so a like 21 or 22-year-old photographer shot that story in that cover shoot, and he was the first Black photographer to shoot a Vogue cover, which is nuts. Vogue has been around forever. And there hasn't been an Asian photographer that shot a Vogue cover. Basically, it's just been white photographers who have shot every American Vogue cover in history until this one time.
And is that representative of the industry as a whole? Like, is it really? I mean, I'm sure there's obviously Asian American photographers.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, when you're your working day, when you see the crews, when you see other photographers, are there a lot of minority photographers working in fashion?
I don't know. I mean, not. No, I would say I would say it's a small percentage. Mm. Yeah, definitely. Because if I think about, you know, Asian photographers that are shooting for like Vogue or kind of the mainstream publications out there, I could probably count it on one hand, you know? And like, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lack of representation behind the camera, mm-hmm. not to mention in front of the camera right. too. And with Burdock, I guess I just thought, you know, more and more, I've been thinking a lot about representation and doing a lot of reflection. And I kind of thought, you know, like if I did see myself reflected in media, whether it's TV, movies, or magazines, I think I would have had a much easier time growing up, or I would have just, I think it would have changed the way other people treated me or looked at me. Mm. And in the same way, like the way I saw and treated myself.
Do you think having a role model, let's say they look like you, though, let's say there was an Asian photographer and you're like, oh, he or she is doing some rad work. I want to grow up and be kind of like that person. I was always curious, like, how that would have changed even how you imagine your work. Like, in some ways, like, because in some ways, I think, as we were going through this radio show, I realized part of it was, like, you need that. It helps so much to know that door is open to someone like you.
Right.
Even know that possibility is out there in the world, period.
Yeah.
And then some people I was talking to, I was like, oh, it's actually, they're so unique and crazy and doing some amazing stuff because they didn't have a model. And not to say that people shouldn't have models,
yeah.
but it was interesting that like, not only, it's almost like not even quite fair to say that people overcame that lack of a model, but actually use that as a springboard to do something totally like left field because there wasn't anybody saying to not do that either in a weird way.
Right.
And it's an interesting, like, I feel like right now there's a lot of really amazing, certainly much more like minority and people of different genders and different sexual identifications and all this stuff doing crazy stuff that is not at all mainstream, but actually getting a ton of attention.
Right.
I can imagine because they had to fight to be different, like enjoy the difference that they were the whole time. Not really sure I'm going with this, but it was sort of one of those things. I was like, I can't even picture what it would be like if there was someone that looked like me doing what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I don't have no idea how I would approach that differently or not. But
yeah. And that's not to say you obviously can't. It's not a matter of like, because I was inspired by a lot of photographers, regardless of their ethnic background, mm-hmm. because, you know, photography, you're looking at photos. You mm-hmm. you don't necessarily know who shot that photo, but as a career path,
right?
Just knowing that you didn't see someone with an Asian last name mm-hmm. ever in the magazines you're flipping through, and no one that looked like you on the covers or in the magazines, you're just like, okay, I don't know. Like, is this something I could do? Is mm-hmm. there an opportunity for me? Yep. Is anyone going to hire me? Is this going to be a limiting factor? I have no idea. And I think it's definitely changing for the better when I look at the younger generation.
Did you have, growing up, where'd you grow up again?
So I was born in South Korea, in Seoul. And then at the age of 7, my parents moved to Toronto. So I grew up in Canada.
And then from Toronto for SVA here?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And then I went to university for psychology for 4 years in Canada.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. and then moved out here. But
I want to talk about that psychology. I mean, in terms of like, did you, at which point did you know not only that you wanted to be a photographer, but that was even like a possibility or a career, let's say,
yeah,
that was something you could pursue?
You know, like a lot of photographers I talk to have these like crazy stories of like, when I was 6, my grandma gave me her camera and I knew then I was going to be a photographer. Mine like was nothing like that. It was like, I was always into like drawing and, you know, anything creative I was really into. And I had always fantasized about doing anything in the arts, yeah. whether it's being a painter or a musician or an actor or all these things. And I wanted to do everything. I wanted to be a comic book artist, mm-hmm. or at one point I wanted to be an animator or a magician. Like everything yeah, yeah. changed all the time. But my degree was in human resource and psychology. And one summer, I think it was second or third year of university, my aunt had called me from Korea and said, hey, I know you're doing some HR at school. Do you want an internship at Samsung in Korea? And I said, okay, that sounds good, I guess. So I went to Korea for a summer and I interned in the HR department at Samsung, and I was so miserable. I put on a suit every morning, got there, and I mean, I think back now, and that was like probably a blessing in disguise, because if I hadn't experienced that extreme amount of
misery,
I probably wouldn't have made that commitment to really go.
Shout out Samsung.
Yeah, exactly. Because they literally, and my Korean's not great. I mean, I'm fluent in the sense I could speak to my parents about everyday things, but I can't talk politics. I can't. My vocabulary is limited. And I get there and they're like, okay, so we came back from a conference in, I don't know, LA. Here are the HR notes that they gave us. Please translate this to Korean. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I don't even understand half these words in English. How am I going to translate this? And so I literally sat there with a dictionary and I'd have to type it out. And
did you see that at that point? You're like, this is my future. Were you like, fuck.
I don't think it even, I didn't even think that far. I was like, how am I going to make it through the rest of this day? And I'd like literally got so good at, but at the same time, there were no repercussions for not getting it done. They just needed to give me something to do. I don't think they even cared.
Yeah.
They weren't going to like read those
just keep you
terrible translations I gave them. So I got really good at like pretending to type with my eyes closed and falling asleep at the computer, because it was like in this like cubicle. So as long as I kept my head up and looked like I was typing,
just concentrating. They didn't know really I was asleep.
Yeah.
Just really squinting to see the screen.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'd like take a 10-minute nap, wake up. There'd be a bunch of like, D-D-D-D-D-D-A-S-F-F, you know, and I had to delete it and get back to work.
What year was this in college?
I think it was like between maybe third and fourth year, second and third maybe. And yeah, and then after, like, the work culture in Korea is insane. Like, these guys like work like all the time. So I get there at 7. We'd finish at 6, but then culturally, like, you have to hang out together socially too. So then we have to go like play sports together. So at the company, they had uniforms there, or like gym clothes.
You just go straight into that.
And then we'd have to go play baseball with a bunch of like older men, older businessmen. I'm like the youngest kid there. And then after, they're like, okay, we got to go eat dinner and go drinking. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the worst thing ever. And I lasted like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And I told my aunt, I'm like, I'm really sorry. I hope like you don't care, but I can't do this. Like, I'm miserable. I'm not learning a single thing. All I'm learning is that I hate this. And that I'm going to drop the HR part of my, like, you know, my degree. Yeah. I'm just going to do psychology. And I found out one of my cousins, who I hadn't seen since I was probably like 6, was a still life photographer at like a newspaper in Korea.
Oh.
And
so you were there still for like 2 months or something.
Yeah, I still had 2 months because I was supposed to intern at Samsung for 2 months. That was the thing. So I quit and I just called him up and I said, hey, I'm your cousin from Canada. Could I follow you to work?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty interesting. And I followed him to work for like a month at this like in-house like newspaper photo studio that he worked at. And he would just be shooting like perfume bottles and lotions and such. And I was like, but I was still like, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, you get paid to take photos? This is amazing.
It's a job.
I'm like, I want to do this. And at the end of the quote unquote like internship, he was like, he gave me a camera. He had a spare film camera.
Did you shoot anything like while you were there working with him? Like,
no,
for him?
No. I just like showed up to his office and tried to be helpful.
Just hang around.
And I think I like, yeah, I screwed up a couple stuff here and there. But like, you know, I was just fascinated. Huh. And he gave me the camera. I went back to Canada. And then I think my I still think I'm so bad with time, but I think it was the last year that I arrived back at school, and I was just taking pictures of friends and
but still trying to finish up the psychology.
Trying to finish up the psych degree.
Yeah, like I'm so close. Yeah. Yeah, you got to get this done.
No, well, I still didn't think at that time that it was going to be a career. I was just taking pictures.
Yeah.
And I was just taking pictures, and there was like a school fashion show, and I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna shoot all your like all the models in the school fashion show and create this like catalog for you." They're like, "Okay,
yeah, sure."
So I like made this magazine for the school, and people were pretty excited about it. And then I was like, "Oh, this is pretty cool. Maybe I can do this." But at that point, I still wasn't like convinced that I was gonna do photography because I like. Part of me was like, oh, maybe it'd be really fun to do industrial design and make some like cool chair or something or work for IKEA. I don't know. Like I was kind of all over the place, but I was like, oh, photography seems fun. I'm gonna just try applying. And I told my parents, I was like, okay, well, I think I wanna try this photo thing.
Did you go straight to SVA after undergrad?
Yeah. Hmm. So there wasn't a break. Like during that summer after that fourth year. And like I didn't even graduate.
Yeah.
Like I think all I had to do was apply to graduate at the school to go through the ceremony, but I was so caught up in trying to like get into photo school I didn't even bother like doing the actual graduation. So till this day I still don't have it. Like technically I have all the credits I need to have a psych degree.
Is it just like a document you need to sign?
A document I need to I need to like I don't know. I need to contact my university and be like register to like graduate.
But it's sort of nice knowing it's like I could get that really, but I don't really.
I'm not going to use it anymore. Yeah. And it's like I could. I mean, no one's asking if I have a psych degree. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit stupid because I mean that's to go through 4 years and not get that piece of paper, but.
Were any of your parents or people in your family, I guess you said your cousin was the still life photographer?
Yeah, yeah. And my mother, her major in university was piano. She doesn't see herself as creative, but I think she's really creative. And I grew up, my parents like, I don't know. They claim not to be creative, but I was like always surrounded by like they were really into music. Like my dad really enjoyed playing guitar and like, you know, he played the Beatles at home and my mom played a lot of classical music at home. I think that's creativity around the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far like there was. Yeah. I think we were exposed to a lot of classical music when I was younger. And I played violin like every Asian boy.
Yeah.
It's either like piano or violin.
I mean, we'll say it was like crazy. I love that there's three magazines that have entered into this like lineage.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
but also just like that. I mean, like whether it's magazine or something that you found a way to create some platform to showcase what you wanted to do.
Right.
Or now with this third one is like showcase what you want other people to see, other people doing and stuff.
Yeah.
So we just kind of like to round it out with Burdock coming out next year?
Next year. So we're aiming for spring of 2019. And I guess what we've been saying is it's to showcase the multidimensional Asian American experience. Because I think often we're just kind of painted in this broad brush of, oh yeah, this is Asian, like Bruce Lee or Dragon. Yeah. You know? And I just think it's so important to see yourself represented in media. And I'm just thinking like, my dream is to just have an Asian face. And when you walk into a bookstore or magazine and see yourself represented, you know.
I was curious with the kind of audience, or do you imagine the audience for Burdock, or do you care if the audience is primarily Asian?
No, I don't think so because, I mean, Vogue isn't a white magazine even if 90% of faces in there are white. So I don't think it should be limited to that. But as far as, the visual representation will be all Asian. Mm-hmm. And I think the contributors, we have a bit more flexibility because I've written for, I've shot for publications that of groups that I'm not a part of. I've shot for many gay publications and such. So I think it's important to have a conversation mm-hmm. between different groups. So, so we're still kind of working out exactly what kind of our rules are as mm-hmm. far as contributors go.
So I feel like that's an interesting thing. Like, you know, as we were also looking at guests for the show, came across a couple, you know, Asian American publications or, you know, even very contemporary about culture and arts right. and things like that. And my sense was always, they're as important and interesting as they are, they're also generally within the Asian American world that they're not, like, I didn't even know about them and I've been trying to find them, but they're not really getting a lot of resonance outside of that. Right. And for a while I was like, I can't figure out if it's important that they get resonance outside of that, but I actually think it's essential, especially for those kids to know that it's like, you're not here to just be more Asian necessarily or be accepted within your own community.
Right.
I think the whole thing is that you're getting traction across the board in some way.
Right.
But I was going to ask you how you guys were going to approach that, because that's a tricky thing, I feel like.
It is tricky. Balance. And I think our initial plan was, we're like, let's model it after T Magazine, which we love. Mm-hmm. But then we just felt like if we kind of go too heavy on the fashion or... you know, we just didn't want to alienate anyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember when Crazy Rich Asians first came out, I was like, and, you know, I started hearing about it. I was like, man, like, it's our first movie and it's about crazy rich Asians. Yeah. Doesn't that, like, perpetuate, like, the stereotype? Same reaction.
I was like, fuck this movie. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to see this.
Yeah.
This bullshit.
Exactly. And I was, like, so upset about it. But in retrospect, after I've seen it and kind of everything that's come out, I'm like, that was kind of brilliant because, like, you've picked a genre that, like, is interesting to everyone. Romantic comedy, it's not alienating, and you could go see it with your niece and your grandma and whoever. And I think that was really amazing, that kind of community aspect of it. So I think, I don't know. I just think we're trying to create something that also is very accessible to mm-hmm. a lot of people and not alienate anyone and make it easy so anyone could kind of pick it up. So we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to do interviews with artists and such, but we're also going to have, like, a thing about food and go into the history of pho or, you know, or even just, like, here are three, like, summer hairstyles that you can do. Because I don't know about you, but I remember when I was, I mean, right now we both don't have any hair. Yeah, we both have shaved heads, but I remember when I was in high school, like, if I wanted to go to get a haircut, I'd, like, open up, like, GQ or something and take a picture out of when they give you, like, oh, here's a good summer hairstyle. I'd take it out and it's, you know, like Brad Pitt or whatever. And then I'd go in and show it to the barber and be like, hey, can you do this with my hair?
And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah. I was like, this doesn't look like that. That didn't work. So even just simple things like that I kind of wish I had is, like, almost instructional guides or something that's very specific to our hair, our, like, the texture of our hair, mm-hmm. you know? So I think we want it to be a bit of lifestyle, a bit of fashion, a bit of art, but something that's kind of accessible to all, regardless if you're Asian or not, or, you know.
Is there any way for people to follow it at the moment? Or you'll launch it and kind of make it publicized soon?
Yeah, we're gonna launch our Instagram soon. We're just working out kind of our plan for our strategy for that. But I don't know. I think hopefully people are excited about what they do, and hopefully it could, you know, I just kind of go, if it helps one young person who sees it, then I think our job's done and I've accomplished what we've wanted to do.
It is somewhere yesterday someone asked, how do you, was it yesterday? 2 days ago. How do you know if this is a successful project you're doing? But I think it's that same answer. I think it's, I don't know how to measure it yet, but something like, you get that feeling. I think it's someone's excited about that magazine or someone's excited about this radio thing, and
definitely
that's enough. But thank you so much for being here all the morning and for the hour talking.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good luck in Ohio.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll see you back here soon.
Cool. Thank you.